The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Tonight, Harry Cooper is back. Admiral Cooper is really back from a terrifically productive and fascinating trip to Argentina and other locations as he continues to roll back the dark mists that have been surrounding history as it really happened. This is a journey to find out what really went on in World War II and after World War II, and it is diametrically opposed to that official party line, the Zionist party line, that Hitler died in Berlin and all the rest of it. You know the story. If you've been listening to us for any length of time, or you have written to Harry about it, or perhaps you bought it and read his books, hopefully you have, Hitler in Argentina being the number one bestseller. There are a number of them at sharkhunters.com that you should look at, and more are on the way. The trip this time, fascinating. We're going to talk about some things that have never been spoken about on radio before or anywhere else tonight. Welcome back, Admiral. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
There's only one of us here. He's doing as well as can be expected. Oh, let me change my IV drip just a minute here.
Okay.
There, I'm much better now. Thank you. I put my special mix for the program up there, and it's dripping away. Okay, but all seriousness aside, as they used to say, how was the trip?
Trip was fantastic. As you know, we're going to cover about half of it here and half of it on the Friday show on the 18th.
Right.
But holy smokers, stuff that I never would have thought, and it just absolutely amazing the number of people down there who knew these guys from the Third Reich, who saw them, who saw them in their meetings.
Down there, folks, saw them down there in their meetings. That's what we're talking about.
Down in South America, all these guys that were dead in 1945 in May didn't know they were dead. They wound up down there in South America.
It's amazing what the power of suggestion can do to somebody, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it's more than the power of suggestion. It's flat out propaganda the whole time.
Of course.
We were told that Hitler died by his own hand in the bunker. Eva Braun died of her own hand in the bunker. Martin Bormann got machine gunned off of a tank. Gestapo Mueller just evaporated. Nobody knew what happened to him.
Right.
And, there's other people. There's a couple of ladies that we'll talk about, but not in great depth right now, but next week we got some information that's going to rock even more of the dead people in the bunker stuff.
I haven't heard the name Goebbels very much.
Oh, he was around.
That's what I hear. That's what I hear.
Part of the Third Reich.
Yeah. So anyway, this is on the trail of history as it really played out. And
yeah.
I think many of you have seen the photographs of Adolf Hitler at the Eden Hotel that were taken in approximately 1947.
47, yeah. Actually, they were shot in the annex of the Eden Hotel, which is about 100 or so yards away from the hotel itself. The hotel itself is no longer used as a hotel, mm-hmm. but the annex is. And when I was there a year ago, I stayed in the annex. Big, huge, 16-foot-high ceilings, 12-foot-high doors, claw-footed bathtubs. Hasn't changed at all since
Wow. Wow.
back then.
Who laid in those bathtubs soaking up the luxury? That's fascinating
yeah.
to think about.
Yeah, you have to let your mind wander back and wonder yeah. those very things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you get an eerie feeling, too, sometimes of the people that were there.
I'm sure that there's a lot of energy floating around down there, as it were. And
it
was a very intense group of people. And wherever they went, they would leave their energetic, etheric footprint on things. So you're a sensitive person. I'm not joking. This stuff exists. It gets imprinted on things. And I was just reading about. Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, your own mind. If you've got half an imagination at all,
sure.
you can let your mind wander back and you know, visualize those people were there.
Yeah. Well, the pictures of Hitler in the annex with the icons is proof, more than proof positive. It's ridiculous. It's so.
Yeah. But with knowing, you know, what we know now, if anyone else that we're trying to impart this knowledge to, once they have this information, they never say that Hitler committed suicide in the bunker. The only ones who continue to beat that drum are the people who just don't bother to read the history we've dug up. In other words, their philosophy is
right.
My mind's
right,
made up.
Right.
Don't confuse me with fact.
That's right. So they're also the people who have a vested financial interest in the whole revision of World War II and what allegedly happened there. No need to detail it out. You all know what we're talking about here. But they've got an agenda, and so they're going to keep promoting it. In fact, it's getting worse. Not a week goes by that I don't see a story in one of the UK papers or another with the evil word, not even a word, it's just four letters, N-A-Z-I, N-A-Z. Whenever you see the word Nazi, you got to kind of wonder anymore. It's a marketing word. It's a catch. Only 10% of the German military was even in the party, the National Socialist Party.
Right, and in the Navy, when Dönitz took over the Navy, his men, I know what the U-boats do, but his men were not allowed to belong to any political party. They used the military salute, like I did when I was in the military. They used a regular, normal military salute until the July 1944 attempt on Hitler's life, and then they kind of mandated everybody had to use the what the Goonies call the Nazi salute, which was in fact the Roman salute.
Oh yeah, look at any Roman movie out of Hollywood, and you'll see it. It's there in most of them.
They put their hand in the air like that. Their arm straight out with the hand open to show they had no weapon in their right hand.
It's actually a very friendly symbol, a symbolic gesture. No threat. I'm here. It's just me. That's all.
Friendship.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So okay.
It's been changed a bit.
No. Tell me where you went when you first got down there. Let's do an itinerary this time. Now, for those of you who don't know our programs, you can go to Shark Hunters and you can find all of these programs with the photos, and you can take a little tour with us as we walk through history. So they're all there. These are really quite an archive now.
Yeah, every show I've done with you is there. And so they can go to sharkhunters.com, then click on news, and zingo bingo, all the radio programs are there. Or instead of news, they can also click on previous tours, and all the photos are there. There's, I haven't counted them, but there's got to be thousands of photos.
Oh, you have the world's greatest World War II archive, period. There's nothing like it out there. Never
well, outside of Germany, there we have the largest archive in the world on the U-boats. And
right.
Not only with files and date and data and stuff like that, but letters from the U-boat guys. Thank God I started this early enough, 34 years ago.
Yeah.
I got to meet all these great guys. I had a sleeping room in Otto Kretschmer's house. I've been to visit Erich Topp in his house I don't know how many times. Kretschmer came over to visit in the U.S. once. Top was over here twice. Captain Hardigan, the guy who sank the first ship in American waters, he came over twice.
I've how old is he
house.
Now?
Yeah, he just in March this year, he turned 104, and he's still in good health, according to his son.
Wow, amazing.
So I knew all these guys, and I got their story firsthand. There's no better history than first-person memory.
No, make your hair stand up.
Yeah.
Some of it.
And,
just incredible.
You know, we publish a magazine. You get it electronically.
Yeah.
So
wonderful.
If any of your listeners want, they can just send an email to sharkhunters@earthlink.net and say, hey, I want a free copy, and I'll send the current copy to anybody who wants it. No strings attached.
Just say, I want real history. That'll work, too.
Yeah.
The one movie I want to ask you about, actually, there were two I want to ask you about, that apparently portrayed things as exact as you're going to get. And one, of course, is Das Boot. That's got to be. Now, I guess there's a director's cut, which is longer. It's an epic. It's about 5 hours. I don't know, but that...
Five and a half. We used to have it when it was on tape, but, you know, you play the tape enough times and it kind of fades out.
Sure. Does it...
Yeah, 5.5 hours.
Did the Germans who saw it say that was it? That was it.
Not so much the movie, but the book it came from. The guys I know, the skippers, when I first went over there in 1988, we had a convention. We had about 40 Americans go over. And you mentioned Buchheim's book, Das Boot. Oh, God, they get the bristles stand up on their neck, you know. Oh, that was a terrible book. We denounced that book. And then when you lean on them a little bit, they admit it was a wonderful book, it was a great movie, but they didn't like Buchheim, not because of that book, but because his next book, which translated, loosely translated, was We Are Winning Until They Kill Us, and it was a slap in the face to Gross Admiral Dönitz through the whole book. So if you badmouth Dönitz to the old guys, they got no use for you. So
understandable.
They didn't like Buchheim, so...
Yeah.
But then they would grudgingly admit it was a great movie. Technically, it was absolutely excellent.
Uh-huh.
And the skipper of the boat in that movie who did not get killed, that was U-96 under Heinrich Lehmann Willenbrock. He was a member of Shark Hunters until he died. But in the movie, of course, it made a nice ending for him to get killed.
So the skipper of the boat in the movie... The real skipper was a Shark Hunters member. How nice.
Yeah, he was.
All
yeah,
right.
We learned so much from those guys.
I can't even begin to imagine it. The other movie that I saw when it came out starred James Coburn, and it was called Iron Cross? Iron Cross.
Cross of Iron?
Cross of Iron. And
yeah.
that one, tell me what you hear about that one.
I never saw the movie, and like everything else, some people think it was a great movie, some people think it was a waste of time, so, you know, you say potato, I say potato, you got to see the movie to make your own opinion, but Coburn was an excellent actor, and from what I understand, it was a historically pretty pretty close to accurate.
What's the other good movie you'd point to beside Das Boot then as being accepted by the veterans and acknowledged?
Well, one of the movies that I liked came out, a million years ago, The Enemy Below, with Kurt Jurgens as the U-boat skipper.
Oh, yeah.
And Robert Mitchum as the destroyer escort skipper. That was taken from a true incident. Incidents where Buckley, and of course the Buckley was the destroyer escort in the movie, and USS Buckley got into a war with U-66.
Uh-huh.
And eventually the destroyer escort was able to ram the submarine, but instead of a crash boom ram, it just kind of rode up over the foredeck of the submarine because a wave lifted up and dropped it. And the submarine was lost. Quite a bunch of those guys were killed already in the firefight. But the rest of them all climbed onto the destroyer escort, just trying to save their life. And but there was some gunfire back and forth until the skipper of the Buckley realized these guys are trying to surrender, so just take them prisoner. And as it turned out, way back a million years ago when I used to live in Fox Lake, Illinois, a guy who lived about not even a mile away from where I was living on my boat at the time, he was on the Buckley, and a guy, Vince Nosh, was over from Austria. He was on U-66. They were both on during this battle.
They lived near you?
Well, the Austrian guy did not, but the American guy lived less than a mile away from where I lived. That was in Illinois at the time.
Huh.
And I got the two of them together, and I sat in and listened to the two of them reminiscing about, I remember when so-and-so was doing this, and I remember, my comrade was doing this, and, they were no longer enemies. You know, our motto is yesterday's enemies are today's friends.
Yeah. Wow, okay, The Enemy Below, Cross of Iron, probably, and
yeah,
for sure.
The Enemy Below was unique. Sorry if I'm stepping on you there.
No, it's all right.
It was unique in that was the first movie after the war in which the Germans were portrayed as normal sailors, not raving Nazis,
mm-hmm.
and it portrayed the skipper as just a normal guy. And they actually filmed two endings. In the ending we saw, of course, both the skipper of the U-boat and the destroyer escort were saved by the American fleet when they came up on them. But they filmed another one in which both guys were killed. But they decided not to use that ending and use the one we saw.
Hmm. But in real life, they both survived.
Yes, in real life, they both survived. About half of the German crew, at least half of them, survived.
How interesting. Well, that sounds like a good one. Probably a black and white film, too.
I don't remember. You're probably right. David Hedison was in it.
We got it. Very good.
I haven't seen it in a million years.
All right. At least half a million years.
Right,
now,
right.
We have some pictures up tonight, too, as well. Now, you went down there primarily, what was the target? Did you have a number of things you were going to try and do? And I don't disclose anything you don't need to here. I'm just trying to give our audience an overview.
Right. There'll be a bunch more coming out in the next show, including naming some names. But one of the things I wanted to see, there was a big splash in the news about a month and a half, 2 months ago, about some guy down there was discovered to have Nazi relics in his house. Yeah, big deal, so what? But he apparently had, from the news releases, he had a secret room. You had to fold or pull out part of a bookcase. It opened up like a door. You went into a secret room, and he had some fantastic artifacts.
Yeah, we've seen some pictures for sure. Yeah,
right. And if they're real, according to the estimates, that's worth like $30 million Yankee dollars. But of course, he's claiming that they're not real. But somebody decided to seize them. The government seized them, and they're going to donate them to the Holocaust Museum down there.
No.
I'm still trying to figure out why all the big fuss. It's not illegal there to hold, to keep these things.
Let's just call it World War II
them.
Memorabilia. Big market.
Exactly. It's a huge market. And they weren't stolen. So you got to wonder what was going on. But at any rate, I was supposed to see him when I got down there. So my one contact and I, because my contact down there knows, I mean, he lives there in Buenos Aires. Mm-hmm. So we hop in a taxi, zingo, we go straight over to this guy's shop. Mm-hmm. It's closed. So we go to his second shop. It's closed. We go to his house. Nobody there. The police apparently were still looking into his activities, whatever.
What was he, just a collector? Is that what we think?
No, he was a merchant. He had two shops where he sold antiques.
It was kind of a black market. But even though it wasn't illegal, it was something not politically correct.
Yeah, I don't know if it was a black market. He had his shops open to the public.
Well, that's what I mean. It wasn't illegal, but it's something that you kind of don't want to advertise you have, maybe. Maybe
yeah.
It's for special clientele.
Exactly. So I wasn't able to get to see him. That's bummer.
So you didn't bring back that bust with the white marble of Hitler?
Yeah, it was a white marble base with Hitler's head in silver. Geez, the silver alone, if you melted it down.
Well, it's history, but I don't think this stuff really should go to the Holocaust Museum. No offense. It should go to an archive of history, a broad-based historical archive.
Or better yet, maybe they shouldn't seize it from this guy at all.
Maybe it is his property, eh?
Right.
Now, there was a picture of part of the collection. And this guy had a hell of a collection, and I don't think many of you listen. But there was a drawing of a Zeppelin in a frame.
Yeah.
If you remember that. You remember that?
Yeah.
All right. That was a pencil drawing. I'm willing to bet that was a Hitler pencil drawing, possibly done after World War I, maybe in the 20s, early 20s, before he got involved with the party. I think that's a Hitler original in that frame.
Yeah, I think your estimate would be accurate on that, just my assumption.
The reason I say that is because I used to own about an 8x11 Hitler pencil drawing.
Mm.
And he did that size work, and it was phenomenal. I had five other pieces smaller, and a so-called well-known World War II military collector said, you know, he lived nearby, and he says, can I take these home? I want to take pictures of them, blah, blah, blah. Oh, yeah, okay, you can take them home. Never seen them again.
Yeah.
Gone. He sold them.
You didn't, you weren't nice enough to give him all your banking information to take home, too, huh?
I was the stupidest move of my life. Now, I understand that the FBI has an art recovery division, and
yeah.
I'm going to submit these photos to them. I took the guy to court. He didn't show up. I won the judgment. He declared bankruptcy, so he never paid a penny. Same old thing. So those things are out there. But I saw that picture, and I said, damn, that style looks very much like the one I had.
Yeah, most likely it was Hitler original, because who else Third Reich was a famous artist.
That's right. That's right.
Nobody I can think of.
Anyway, that was the deal there. And the lesson here is if you have anything of value like that, don't loan it to anybody. God,
no,
am I stupid. I just didn't know.
No. You're not stupid. It just, you're not as tightly woven as I am.
Well, this guy was supposed to be
a
big collector.
And I remember...
Yeah.
Way back in the early days, there was a guy named Hans Gobler who was a crewman on U-505. He had three photo books about 3 inches thick, jammed with photos from the war, and he made the mistake of loaning two of them to a friend. Never saw him or the stuff again. People are always telling me they've loaned out their book, whatever the book happens to be in our conversation. The book never comes back.
Right.
And I got a an email from one of our members yesterday. He was showing his copy of Hitler in Argentina that we sell, and one of his friends looked at it and just fell in love with it, wanted to borrow it. But he said, no dice. You want one? Buy one yourself, because, you know, if they get them from us, yeah, they come autographed. Big deal. I sign them all. But he said that my autograph was in it, so he wasn't letting it out of his house.
Good. Yeah. Well, don't. The moral here is really don't. You got precious books and things. Don't loan them. They just don't.
Right, because it can be your best buddy for your whole life, and all of a sudden they forget to give it back.
Forget to give it back. It's gone. Somebody had a system. What, doggone it. And I think it was, you want to borrow one of my books from my library? We fill out a library card. You leave me a $50 deposit and a check, whatever, cash, and then you can borrow my book.
Oh, well, that's a good system.
It helps a little bit.
Yeah.
So, all right. Okay, so where did you start down there? Let's start at the beginning here.
Okay, landed in Buenos Aires and went to the hotel. I stay in the Navy hotel there.
Yeah.
It's a very nice hotel and not very much money at all. And the way their economy is falling apart, it's costing me less and less money to stay there because the Yankee dollar is more and more powerful.
Next trip, they'll pay you.
Yeah. When I was there a year ago, one U.S. dollar bought 6 pesos. When I got there this year, early July, $1 bought 15 pesos. And when I left 3 weeks later, it bought 18 pesos. So their economy's in free fall. But anyhow, I went to the hotel, got all straightened out, and then 2 days later, the first day after that, I went to meet Lawrence DeMello at a beautiful classic cafe where we meet whenever I'm in Argentina. And doggone, I walk in the place, this place, beautiful place, built in the 30s, absolute old world charm. It's now a Burger King.
Oh, come on.
Burger King.
Well, everything
was... At the other end, it's a Starbucks.
Disgusting. Disgusting.
Yeah. So... anyhow, in my opinion, she is the world's number one expert on Martin Bormann. She has a ton of stuff, and she's going to be releasing a book, I believe, shortly. But yeah, I'm not going to get into that. I don't want to steal her thunder. And we sat in this cafe for probably a good hour, chatting, going over things, and... I took a couple of pictures of her. She's a beautiful woman, but I was threatened with death and dismemberment if I put the pictures up on your show. I put them up on our website, and I caught hell for that.
Uh-huh.
But she's a gorgeous woman, for God's sake. So anyhow,
so the ones that you sent me that I have on my wall, I should send back?
Burn them. What the heck, burn them. No, she's a very attractive lady, and I guess women...
They never get it right. A beautiful woman, that's off, that's not right. The angle's wrong, the lighting's wrong. But, the beauty shines through, and it doesn't matter.
I go through the same thing here, every so often I'll just tell my wife, hey, let's go out to lunch. Okay. Oh, I got to get ready. I said, well, you're ready. You're dressed. I'm dressed. Oh, no, I got to do my hair, put on my makeup. I said, geez, we're going to a Greasy Spoon diner down the road. Oh, no, God forbid. You got to wait half an hour while they get all gussied up. But that's what we love about them.
Well, I must tell you, you do very well on your eye makeup. You can't notice. It's just,
right.
It's almost, it looks natural. You look great.
Yeah, something like that.
So.
But anyhow, all the time we were talking, going over files and pictures and plans of what we were going to see, where we were going to go, there's some guy at the next table just absentmindedly banging away on his laptop. Okay, fine, big deal. So we got done with our conversation, and she had some business to do at another part of Buenos Aires. So, we could still talk. We jumped on the bus. And it's good I had her with me. I wouldn't know. I'd still be riding the bus if I was on my own. And we went 40 blocks, which is just about 4 miles, I think. It was 30-something blocks. It was 4 miles. We got off. We go into the office. She does what she needs to do. We come back outside. There's the same guy that was banging away on his laptop standing around in front of this office.
What a coincidence. What a coincidence.
We came out. He just turned around and walked away. So, but like I put on the website under these pictures, and if anybody wants to see the pictures of Lawrence DeMello, they're on the website. Go to sharkhunters.com and then click on previous tours and click on this tour. And there's Lawrence, beautiful woman. Send me
why doesn't the link just say beautiful woman?
Well, that too. But, you know, when she called and was, or not called, emailed, she was angrier than hell. I emailed back. I said, hey, you know, you didn't tell me not to put them up there, or if you did, I forgot. But people have commented that you're a beautiful woman, so what's the problem? Oh, okay. So anyhow,
but she doesn't go by Larry, does she?
I hope not. No, it's Lawrence with L-A-U-R-E-N-C-E, not L-A.
I know.
Yeah.
Well, I've got I have a friend here who knows her, and
okay,
yeah.
So, anyhow, we got on the bus going back. You know, she thought it was kind of funny, and I said, "Well, you know, when the world's number one expert on the escape of Adolf Hitler flies 5,000 miles down to South America to meet with the world's number one expert on Bormann, somebody must be interested." So we don't know who that guy was or where he went, but that was our first.
He wasn't wearing a Visit Tel Aviv T-shirt or anything, was he?
No, I don't know what he was. I don't even. I remember he was bald. That's all I remember about him.
Ah, that's suspicious in and of itself.
Right. He didn't have a Snidely Whiplash type mustache. For those of you who remember back to Dudley Do-Right back in the 1960 commercial cartoons, Dudley Do-Right.
That's right.
He was one of my heroes.
We like Dudley. Okay.
Yeah, Dudley Do-Right.
All right, let's jump in our pictures here. What do you say?
Into the pictures.
First
when
picture?
I was with that one fellow who rode with me trying to find the collector, there was this place he wanted me to go to. You see the second picture. Look at the second picture first. I sent them to you in reverse order.
Okay.
The flower shop.
Right.
This flower shop has been in the same family for 3, 4, 5 generations. And when the grandfather of the brother and sister who have the shop now, when the grandfather was running the shop in the 40s and 50s, across the street, which is the top picture, there was a sort of a German community hall or whatever, and they had meetings there. And
in the gray building, if you look in the mirror of the flower shop, I mean the window, it mirrors across the street. And
exactly.
Then bring your eyes up to the first picture, and you'll see what that reflection is showing.
And when the war ended, they had a society there. I forget what it was in Spanish, but Mujeres y Niños Alemán, in other words, the women and children of Germany, they were collecting old clothing and all sorts of stuff to send to Germany after the war was over, like we did too here in the United States. We'd send bundles for Britain. We'd send care packages to try to help the civilians get back on their feet. But they also had political rallies there. And, I'm going off the top of my head, but the old guy who owned the shop, the grandfather, told his son and his grandchildren that he had seen, Bormann was there, he said, and he saw Gestapo Mueller, but he doesn't remember whether he saw Mengele or not. But
up in that upstairs meeting hall?
Yeah.
Yeah. Look in the middle window. Do you see what's there? There's a steel bar coming out with a pulley on the end that they could use to lift things up to the balcony.
I didn't notice that before.
I'm going on your next trip with you, so you notice these things.
Yeah, well, it's right in Buenos Aires, and that's where I always stay. So I'll bop on over there again.
It's probably just for pulling up dead bodies and nothing of any consequence.
Things, yeah. Nazi gold, that's what it's for.
That's where it went. No, that makes perfect sense now.
You know, if you add up all the gold that was attributed to the Nazis, there's not that much gold in the world.
Probably not.
I read somewhere where if all the gold that has been discovered so far would be put together, it would fill two Olympic-sized swimming pools, and that's it. That's all the gold in the whole world.
Yeah, I understand. It's not that much. I got you.
Right. But according to the crazy books, the Nazis had 10 times that much.
Trains full of gold buried all over the place.
Right. U-boats filled with gold sunk here and there and everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, so, there's a lake across the street from me, and there's probably a U-boat sunk there with gold in it. I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, yeah, you send that question to that U-boat.not website, and they'll describe the boat and everything else about it.
Mm-hmm. All right, question. The flower shop, what's the link again? The guy just, the grandfather remembered seeing that. And look at the graffiti on those walls. Shame, 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 shame.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I don't know what it says, but because I don't read Spanish. But, yeah, the grandfather owned it during the 40s and 50s, and he watched these people coming and going across the street, having their meetings, singing their songs.
Right. How interesting.
And then when the war ended, it was, kind of like a gathering point for clothing and, you know, day-to-day essentials, rope to tie things together and anything for normal day-to-day life.
Got it. All right. Okay. Picture number three, Franco and Christiane.
Well, geez, you pronounced her name right. It took me two or three meetings before I was able to put that together.
All right.
They are doctors. He is an eye surgeon.
Oh, these are the doctors. Oh.
These are the doctors. He's an eye surgeon. She's a surgeon. She's a gynecologist. They have done such incredible research on people down there, including two ladies that we'll get into later. But they have done incredible research into high-ranking guys like Bormann, Gestapo Mueller, Mengele, or as it's pronounced down there, Mengele. Their primary thrust is Mengele. And
because he was a fellow doctor?
Well, yeah, but I don't think they knew each other.
Just kidding.
Right, because Franco is too young. But they got on this trail, I think about 15 years ago, because of the two ladies we'll talk about.
Right.
But we'll make a whole show of that for the Friday the 18th, and I guarantee you, it's going to be a bigger history rocker than Hitler and Eva Braun did not commit suicide in the bunker. This one's going to be a bigger history rocker.
Wow. All right, yeah. Mr. Cooper, your reputation's on the line. That's saying a lot.
These people did such incredible research. I've seen their research, and they didn't leave any stones unturned. And they've got hard, solid, factual proof of what we're saying and what I'll be telling you directly here.
Okay.
So this this was taken in a restaurant, believe it or not.
I would have guessed that.
Yeah.
Long shot.
In Paraguay, and I've never seen a restaurant like this before. It was a long, narrow restaurant, probably 40 feet long and maybe 20 feet wide, but there was a wash sink screwed to the wall right between their table and the next table, so with a bar of soap right in the restaurant. So if you want to wash up, you can wash up right between some of the tables. And if you look on the plate, you'll see what looks kind of like a donut or a bagel.
Yeah.
But it's made out of corn. and it's just crunchy and has no flavor, so I didn't take one. I had my usual American breakfast of a Coke.
A Coke?
A Coke, yeah.
Just so it isn't Diet Coke.
Oh, God, no. As it turned out, in between the days I did the first pictures there we saw and the day here when I met these guys, I wound up confined to my room in my hotel for 3 days. I made the mistake of eating at the Burger King in Buenos Aires, right down the street from my hotel. Mm. And we found out several days later that the purveyor that was supplying the beef to the fast food restaurants in all of South America there, Burger King, McDonald's, et cetera, had been supplying some bad beef. And people all over South America were coming down with really serious problems.
Yeah.
A couple of little kids even died. And
that's E. coli.
Well, E. coli or salmonella or something like that, but I was I couldn't come out of my room for 3 days. Thank God my friend in Buenos Aires is also a doctor, general practitioner, and so he was calling in prescriptions to the pharmacy down the road, down the street from my hotel, and then he'd be calling the desk clerk, ordering him to go get my meds, and since this was a Navy hotel, and he's a lieutenant commander,
jeez,
and the guy at the desk is not, he was giving commands and telling him, go get Cooper's meds. So fortunately, I pulled out of it after 3 days, but holy cow, it was horrible.
That is not fun. Argentine beef is supposed to be awesome. I don't eat it, but it's supposed to be wonderful.
It is, because they don't use the growth hormones
and
stuff like that that we see up here. But if it's tainted,
something was wrong.
Boy, I'll tell you, it was just no fun. I lost about 8 pounds there in 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, I was just so dehydrated. You know, I was drinking water. And my friend down there, Eduardo, the doctor, Eduardo, he says he had seen people die from dehydration even though they were drinking water like mad. He said, you got to put the salts back in your body.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So he said, your best bet, go get Coke. Drink Coke. Let the bubbles fizz out of it and then drink it. Or, he says, have you ever heard of a product called Gatorade? I says, yeah, it was invented 60 miles from where my house is.
That's funny.
So I chugged down a couple bottles of Gatorade, and I was back on my feet again, thank God. But holy cow. I lost 3 days there. But anyhow, we got into Paraguay. I have never I've never seen a country like Paraguay. I'm not sure they could even be considered a third world country. They got incredibly horrible roads. Paraguay is almost entirely red clay.
Right.
Same kind of red clay they found in Bormann's skull when he was allegedly discovered there in Berlin.
Mm-hmm.
But anyhow, they make bricks. They make bricks for everybody. Well, some of the bricks get broken and don't get delivered, so they use them to pave the roads. So you've got all these uneven bricks just on the road, and so each one of your wheels is bouncing at a different cadence, and you're going down the road, it just beats the hell out of the truck. We had a heavy-duty truck with overload springs. Just beat the hell out of us. So, but Paraguay has, I think, even more hidden secrets than Argentina.
Wow.
So, yeah. We were finding out, well, as a matter of fact, the next couple pictures down, you'll see the roads. But first, let's talk about the Museo de something or another Antiques. This was in a little dinky town. I forget the name of it. Santa Rio, I think it was. A little dinky town. But it was founded by Germans about the late 19th century. And so, in this museum are all sorts of artifacts, and the lady, she was an older lady, probably 70-ish, who runs the museum. We had to dig her out of her house because the museum wasn't open that day, but, you know, Franco and Pascal. He was the other guy with us, Pascal. He explained, oh, we got this visiting gringo from up north, and let's open it up so we can see it, because he ain't going to be here tomorrow. Nice lady. She explained all sorts of stuff, and then she asked, why was I there? And I explained, you know, what we were doing. And I said, we understand that Joseph Mengele was very prominent in this area. Oh, her face clouded up. And she says, I knew Mengele. I didn't like him. He was not a good man. He saved the lives of a lot of people in this area, but I didn't like him. Okay. And then I gave her my card, which has a picture of my book on it, Hitler in Argentina. And she looked at it. Oh, Hitler. And her face all beamed and she smiled. She was happy to see Hitler's picture there. So these guys.
Do we expect that she might have seen Hitler in the area?
I don't know, and she kind of clammed up after that, but she nodded approvingly when she saw the picture of Hitler. But as we found out later, we were there 3-4 days in Paraguay, and we found out that Mengele was indeed very prominent in that area. Gestapo Mueller was there a time or two. Bormann was there. Hitler was there at another place. But it's incredible. The older people there, they're not surprised when we tell them that we're looking for information about Hitler and the other guys from the Third Reich. Of course, because they lived there, and these people knew they lived there. So, you know, no big surprise.
It was no big deal.
Right, and we met, like I say, we met this older lady who saw them, who knew them. Huh. Like I say, she knew Mengele and didn't like him.
Yeah, interesting.
She never said why, but...
Didn't he die swimming in the ocean, allegedly?
Well, that's the story. He was at a resort on the Atlantic coast of Brazil, and he had a stroke and drowned, or he drowned and had a heart attack or something like that. But one of our members, who has since passed away, was an active agent for Dutch Secret Service. And he told us at the time, this was like 20-odd years ago, he told us that his boss had come down to Brazil and sat down with Mengele and interviewed him for an hour on tape. And this was a year after Mengele allegedly died. So he was going to send me a copy of the tape, but doggone it, the tape disappeared.
Oh, jeez. This is really frustrating.
Yeah, you're not kidding. It's frustrating because word of mouth is good, but
What we're telling all of you, and what Harry always does when he comes back from these trips, is that there was a whole culture down there of former German ranking officers and officials. There might have been 20, 30,000 of them. We don't, maybe 100,000. We don't know how many ultimately got out of Germany and made it to Paraguay, Argentina, and other locations down there. But they did live, German communities all over the place, meetings. It was a fascinating period in history.
Absolutely correct.
So, okay. And did you see any Entenmann's pastries down there?
No. And much as we love Charlie Entenmann, he's been a member of Shark Hunters for about 20 years, and he doesn't own the company anymore, but they make a great product. I'm trying real hard to stop overloading myself with sweets. My doctor thought I had diabetes, but, you know, what does he know? But I'm trying to get my sugar level down, and as I say, I've leveled out now. I've lost 9 pounds. Which is a good thing.
Well, you went on the Argentine beef diet. I understand why you lost the 9 pounds.
Yeah, right. Yeah, at Burger King. Boy. And my friends on this trip, Franco, Christian, and Pascal, every time we'd pass a Burger King, Harry, you
there's the joke.
At Burger King. They always pronounce it Burger King. No, keep on driving.
How many Corvettes? There wouldn't be any Corvettes in Paraguay, I know that, because of the roads. But did you see Corvettes in Argentina?
No, never. There might be some, I don't know, but I didn't see any really
American cars.
Well, there are
classics.
Some. Yeah, well, the place is overloaded with Falcons, Ford Falcons from the 1960s.
Mm-hmm.
I guess Ford had a manufacturing plant in Brazil. I'm not sure, but they're all over the place.
Yeah.
But then they got Japanese cars, and not very many. They got a lot of American cars, too, but I didn't see any sports cars.
Hmm.
And for what it's worth, I was just out in my Corvette today, just got a new distributor, new carburetor. That was my present to myself, as you know, back in the year 2000 when my doctor said, hey, I was wrong, your test came back, you don't have cancer after all.
Well, if you run into that, call me. I can help you.
Yeah.
We have products
and
sponsors.
We don't have cancer in this family anymore. Yeah. We just don't want any part of it.
Yeah. Nope. All right. That's hour number one, and Harry and I will be back. We're going to take you through the rest of the pictures in the next hour, have some more fun. And I'm looking at the pictures of the road. Is that actually what the roads look like in Paraguay?
Absolutely.
My
God. I was not in the same place. I took two different pictures in two different areas, but the roads are like that. They just beat the living daylights out of your car. You're going down the road, and all the wheels are bouncing in different directions.
How can that be? How can they do that?
After the first day, I had to wind up wearing my back brace because, you know, a broken back like I had last year, it never heals because it's a compression fracture.
Got it.
And just beat the hell out of you.
Yeah. Wow. All right. Not fun. Back with more after this.